You're listening to a CNBC TV 18 podcast, and this is Smooth Ride. Welcome to a brand new episode of the Smooth Ride podcast. I'm Alisha Sachdev, and for this episode, we'll bring you insights from the much-loved passenger car brand Toyota Kirloskar Motor, which sells iconic products like the Toyota Innova and Fortuner in the premium SUV market, but also compact and subcompact SUVs like the Glanza and Urban Cruiser to attract a younger customer base. I spoke to Naveen Soni, Senior Vice President at Toyota Kirloskar Motor, a company veteran for the last two decades, and we talked about matching supply to demand as showrooms open up again, the demand picture itself, Toyota's product portfolio, its EV and hybrid strategy, and we'll also throw in some Toyota lingo like Genchi Ginbutsu and Hyjunka for good measure. And what do those words mean? Well, listen in to find out. Thank you so much, Naveen, first of all, for taking the time out today and speaking to me for the Smooth Ride podcast on CNBC TV 18.
No, it's a pleasure, obviously.
So, Naveen, the last time we talked was around the time, of the launch of the Urban Cruiser. That sure. was a launch, you know, that took place online, the first such product for Toyota, of course, but the industry was, you know, already adapting to situations like these. We seem to be back in the same sphere, you know, where physical large gatherings as such seem to be difficult. And you are, you know, handling critical functions, sales, services, proper front end roles. So, of course, you've had, a whole year to absorb these changes. So if you could just summarize this for me, how has the last 1 year been, with respect to how, the pandemic has played out, for you as an auto company, for you as somebody who deals with, your sales teams, who keeps in touch with manufacturing, all of those functions.
Sure.
Just if you could distill those few learnings and insights from that.
Sure. Yes, you're 100% right. We come from a city which is working, on this kind of a platforms for a very long time. Bangalore is known for its IT industry, and IT industry works on remote basis. But coming from a manufacturing industry, yes, it was a big learning exercise for us, I would say, because I think for manufacturing industry, yes, manufacturing cannot happen remotely. But all the other functions in manufacturing, the office side functions, we have to kind of graduate to basically doing these things online. And this is the new normal that we have learned. We've been through two cycles of COVID. Hopefully, I can say that, the second cycle is weaning out now. So the second cycle also is nearing completion. So we've been through two cycles of this pandemic. But at the same time, it was a great experience to understand the intricacies. And having said that, I think there are a few positives and definitely there are a few negatives also. The positives are that, that the workforce efficiency has not been compromised. We are still working at the same or even higher level of workforce efficiencies as compared to, earlier face-to-face or going to the office kind of a situation. So that is one big plus because, see, what happens in this case is, as you can imagine, is that, people have to kind of click buttons on the computer to join meetings and not physically move from one room to the other or go somewhere, et cetera, et cetera. But the minus point is, Toyota believes in a culture of what we like to call as, sorry for using this Japanese word, Genchi Gebutsu, which basically means that, that you have to go to the site, see the situation and then make a decision. We don't like
What's that word again for the benefit of whoever is listening? Perhaps that's one thing we'll be able to take away from this.
Sorry. Yeah, there is a word called Genchi Gembutsu. Genchi Gembutsu is basically it's basically we practice this in our normal business activities. Basically, we'd like to support all our business partners and everybody that we want to, not sitting at a remote location, but we'd like to go and meet those people, understand their issues, and then try and give them a solution. So that's a very typical Toyota way of working. this had to be kind of compromised, and even issues like, you know, but we had to find ways and means to, you know, overcome these things. So the service team to settle warranty claims had to set up, how should I say, video cameras and you know, check those parts with video cameras, etc. Now, these are some things which are very new for us. Of course, the actual manufacturing process cannot be, as I said earlier, cannot be done remotely. But everything else we had to do, basically sitting at different places and then making sure that, you know, that we are trying to work together. And it's been a very, I think, enriching, at the same time, successful learning experience. Because people have learned these things very nicely. And in fact, we had to go to the extent of, you know, at times, curb their enthusiasm and say that, you know, that there are certain lunchtime these things, disciplines that have to be maintained. Because initially when we did this exercise, after about 4 or 5 months, we did a feedback from our employees, and it was not a very good thing to know that, you know, that people were in their enthusiasm of blocking times, or even, you know, using up lunch hours and post office hours also. So there are two very clear rules: no meetings during lunchtime, that is one, and post office hours only if it is very, very essential. Now, this exception is only made because sometimes what happens is, because of time zone differences, next day morning there is something being reported into Japan and things like that. So you don't have the liberty of, and that would have happened in any case, even if you're working on site. But otherwise,
that's
it's
true.
I wouldn't, there's nothing much to complain. There's a new way of working that we have learned, is what I would say.
Absolutely. And you're right about, you know, how the organization really, you know, learns a lot of things about itself also. And, you know, how it's possible to do something completely differently, you know, from, you know, what you've been doing for a while. But what about, you know, the automotive supply chain itself? You know, of course, production had to be handled very carefully, considering that you had, you know, to adhere to so many protocols to ensure your workers were safe. Apart from that, there were also the challenges of, you know, just procuring, you know, the many parts that one needs to put a car together. We've seen, you know, shortages of various kinds come into play, semiconductors being just one of them. And I'm also assuming there must have been disruption also coming from, you know, your tier two and three suppliers, you know, who have also been affected by lockdowns. So just give me some color, you know, about how all of that also played out, you know, especially when we saw this, you know, second wave of COVID, you know, from April onwards. And how have those things sort of progressed since then?
Okay. Yeah, you're absolutely right that, you know, actually there's a big difference between phase one or COVID 1.0 and COVID 2.0. Basically, in COVID 1.0, the entire country had been put to, you know, kind of lockdown. So there was nothing that anybody could have done. And therefore, it was kind of, you know, a situation that everything had to come to a grinding halt. And for the months of March 23rd, when it started, till April and May last year, when it started to open up, you know, everything was shut down. But this time around, the difference was that different parts of the country, depending on the intensity and the local government's understanding, took this decision to lock down at different points of time. Now, as you know, as you rightly said, you know, the supply chain, tier two, tier three, goes on to various cities, though we try and aggregate them as much as possible. But they come in, at least in clusters, if not, you know, in different states. There is a Pune cluster, there is a, you know, Gurgaon cluster, there is a Chennai cluster. And of course, there is most of our suppliers are in the vicinity of our factory, which we have tried to inculcate at the very beginning. Now, having said that, you know, but still we have this supply chain across the country, which supplies parts and components to, you know, make those vehicles. And you cannot ship out a vehicle with 99.9% of the parts. You have to have 100% of the parts on the vehicle before it is shipped out. So basically, given from there, what we have realized is that, again, one of the principles of just-in-time had to be kind of, you know, compromised a bit. When we realized that in some places where, you know, shutdown was to happen on a particular date, we had to request the manufacturer to kind of, you know, give us some additional parts, more than the, you know, what we, sorry, again, using a Japanese word, haijunka is a word which you use for leveled up production. Leveled up production means high junker. Uh-huh. So we like to have everybody, entire production, entire supply chain having no pile up of stocks, you know, because that is something which is unnecessary and wastage as per our definition.
Right.
So, but we had to do those things because we knew that on a particular date, that particular supplier will be forced to shut down by the government of that particular state or for that district. So we had to request them to kind of, you know, produce extra and give it to us so that we could actually continue our production, because our lockdown dates were not clear or not announced until then. So these were things that have happened in the past, but we had to accommodate these things, you know, to kind of, you know, take into market realities into account. And that is where we have kind of adjusted the principles of even Toyota production system, you know.
Right, right. And, you know, until 2019 or even, you know, early 2020, you know, when we were talking about a lot of inventory issues, you know, like you're mentioning, just-in-time was sort of, you know, the thing to aspire to. But now that we've seen these uncertainties, you know, can really play out anytime. Do you think that sort of takes away from the focus that, you know, the whole automotive value chain was building towards? Or do you think that it's going to sort of settle back into that same rhythm once,
Sure, because the merits of just-in-times are far too great to be overlooked. These are minor adjustments that we are making only for a few set of suppliers. The other set of suppliers were supplying as per just-in-time only. So it is only when we had to foresee a condition that, you know, that if we do not deviate from that principle for a particular supplier for a limited time, then and only then, because JIT is our DNA, and we cannot do away with this, because that's the way we say that, you know, that you make yourself sustainable and more profitable also. So from that point of view, we don't want to. And in fact, the good thing that one of the good thing that has happened because of that is in the second wave, when this happened, we quickly adjusted not only the incoming material inflow, but outflow of, you know, finished goods also. So we had to kind of adjust what we gave a commitment to the dealers based on a certain time span, what kind of vehicles would come to them based on their requirements. So we, again, because they were getting into lockdown and we wanted this inventory not to become dead inventory, so we had to reallocate these things to other dealers. And the end result was that wherever the sales was possible to happen, you know, wherever it was possible to happen, the things we had to take into account, and supply had to match the demand. Supply had to match the demand, because otherwise keeping dead inventory is not something that we like to, you know, do. And this is continuing right now also as we speak, because in the last 1 week, a lot of changes have happened. 40% of the outlets have come from, there are three categories of outlets that we have declared ourselves. One is what is called the red category, which is totally closed. You know, the city is closed or whatever. Then there are yellow category, which is the partly open one, and the green category, which is fully open. So in the last 1 week's time, 40% of our sales outlet, which nearly contribute to something like, you know, 35 to 40% of the sales, have moved from fully closed to partly open. Partly open.
Okay. So, this has happened in the last 1 week.
Last 1 week, because most of the lockdowns were till end of this month, previous month. So beginning of June, 31st of May, if I compare myself to, you know, 31st of May as of today, like 46% of the outlets are still in, you know, the closed or the red zone, which contribute 44% of my sales. But 52% are now in the partly open category. And 40% of this 52% has actually moved in the last 1 week's time. So dealerships are now, so dealerships are now waking up to, you know, inviting customers. So one of the first things that they are doing is getting their staff vaccinated, because I think that's the only tool which even we are doing as a company the same thing. We have taken a distinct task of, you know, vaccinating nearly 16,000 of our not only employees but their families and their contract workmen and everybody. So we are on this path of, you know, vaccinating the entire organization, including their immediate family also. So this is something that is very important to give comfort to the customers, to the employees themselves who are working, you know, that they are in kind of a safer zone, if not the completely safe zone, at least in the safer zone. And that's what we are trying to do right now. So matching supply to demand is going to be a challenge in the next, I think, 1 month's time period also. Then I think things can go back to normalcy, where the normal demand supply operations can happen.
Mm-hmm. I mean, great thing you've brought up, and I wanted to, I will segue a little bit on that point. But before that, so about 60% or so of your sales touch points are either partially open or open right now, right?
52% are partially open. And about 2% are fully open. But net is 54. And this 52% contributes to about 50% of my sales, yes.
Right. So I think what you're pointing at, you know, the fact that matching demand and supply is going to be, what
very important.
You'll have to very closely. Right. So, you know, again, it's a segue. But since you mentioned, I think it's, an interesting development that we saw over the last week was from Mercedes-Benz, right? They came up with a franchise model. So the whole inventory problem as such, you know, they're able to do away with. Now, Toyota, of course, is positioned differently from a Mercedes-Benz. But how do you see the viability of such a model for, you know, mass market players also, or, automakers who have higher volumes? Do you think it's something, you know, with its merits, other automakers can emulate, or would you want to at some point?
Sure. First thing first is that it's very difficult for me to comment on a competitor's move. I don't want to call them competitor also, because I think for Toyota, not so much. For Lexus,
Let's talk about a franchise model.
So basically, in isolation, I think what we believe is that dealerships are a very important component of the manufacturing supply chain. And they play a very important role to be the immediate touch point to the customers in terms of, you know, whether they are to be kind of, you know, sales or service or whatever customer requirements are there. So in a, in a city, say, for example, say Delhi, he would not know, the customer would not know where and who is Toyota. He would know where is my
the
ABC
dealer.
Toyota.
Correct.
Yeah. So he's therefore the representative, the authorized representative, and the channel partner. So we cannot just take away that responsibility away from that particular channel partner, number one. Number two is that we definitely do not want our dealer partners to have inventory levels which kind of make them prohibitively high cost in terms of, you know, dealer operations. So we work on a business model, again the same word I use, Hijunker, leveled up production. You know, there's no part of the channel that should have excess production. If the dealer inventory rises, the effect is on my the speed at which I start making vehicles, what we call as the takt time. So what we do is that in case the dealer channel partners, I would say, have higher than considered inventory, then I think what we do is we lower the speed of the at which our
the dispatches then.
Not only dispatches, the factory speed at which the vehicles are being produced.
I see.
So, So it what is called as the pull system. This is Toyota production system, pull system.
Correct, right.
Dealers pull the vehicles from the assembly line to their dealerships. So basically, that is the main reason why I feel very comfortable with the current system, because dealers, as I said, are one of the most important part of the channel, and most important part in terms of handling customers. Yeah.
So, you know, but a situation where, you know, the company itself owns all of its inventory that it produces. Do you think that's viable or something to explore in the future?
I cannot predict the future, but I think the current system is working extremely efficiently for the current market. So, I am not...
So, you wouldn't fix what's not broken?
Yes, definitely.
All right. Fair enough. You know, so then, of course, we have to also talk about demand, you know, since we've spoken about how, you know, the supply side issues have been, you know, have cropped up and how they've been managed. What is demand looking like at present? And, you know, from my interactions earlier, you know, from whoever I speak to, it, there seems to be a very clear sort of division in, you know, how they perceive demand coming back. There is a section which believes that, you know, because we've gone through this cycle before, there will be, you know, a very, like a much stronger bounce back, at least in passenger cars, which will come back. And then there is the other, you know, side of the story, which says that sentiment has been impacted far more deeply this time. You know, the pandemic has been more personal for people. So therefore, a recovery might be prolonged. Which side of this are you on, and how are you seeing this
so
pan out?
I think that to give you a straight answer first, we are eternally optimistic that yes, business will return to normalcy. Okay, but there are two indicators that we cannot ignore. Just being optimistic for the sake of being optimistic doesn't work in business.
Absolutely.
So there are some lead economic indicators that you and I have to take cognizance of. This time, the rural spread was far, far greater. 53% of the cases and 52% of the mortality comes from rural India this time.
Yeah, very important, right.
So that's very important. Now, wave two has reminded people that there could be a wave three. Okay, when wave one was over, people said, yes, that's the end of this issue. But no, it came back and came back stronger. So wave two has told people that there could be a wave three. So that makes them more cautious. Okay, then those who are not adequately insured, etc., have been through the cycle, so they'll be even more cautious in spending, you know, because they know their priorities are. Lastly, which is not being taken into account as of now, in all this while, the fuel prices have actually crept up, you know.
So these are
things that are not so positive for the market opening up and coming back soundly. But there are some good points. Number one, monsoon has been very good. This is the second or third year of monsoons, which has been very good. So the agri crop, which is the agricultural crop, will be very good. And hopefully that will be putting money in the rural parts of the country. And our rural sales have grown up 5% in the last 3 years or 2 years plus.
And what do they account for of your total sales?
Non-metro sales is about 65%. It was 60% 2 years back. So after COVID, non-metro sales have actually increased by 5% to 65%. And metro sales are 35%. And the good thing is that, the good thing is that monsoons have been good. Second is real estate and stock markets are doing well. So that further fuels the market in some
stock
space.
Stock markets, of course, seem to have a mind of their own.
Yes. I don't relate necessarily stock market to auto sales, but it's one of the GDP indicators that you can rely on. For the company, what we have seen is that there are good pending orders when we went into this lockdown this time. We have reached out to those customers and politely asked them about their interest of buying the cars back. 85% of them said that they would wait for the market to open and then buy the car. So this is as against the 65% number that was available last time when we did such a survey after phase one. Then one important thing that you and I have to consider is that, yes, for personal mobility, which is the products, say, below 12 lakhs are going to be more popular. So where we have a good alliance product from our alliance partners. And at the same time, the inventories are very low at the dealerships at this point of time as we speak. So that is there. And finally, there's an aspect, there's a new term that is floating around, and I'm sure you've heard about it, the revenge spending that will happen.
Of course.
So hopefully all of these put together, as I said, there were a few not so good points, rural spread, wave two to wave three, those who are not very comfortable with the, you know, insurance part, and the fuel prices. Now, these are negatives, but as I said, the monsoon, the real estate, our pending order situations, revenge spending, and personal mobility and pent-up demand. So I think there is more to talk about in the positives of it. So that gives us a confidence that, yeah, there would be something positive coming.
So taking all of these factors together, you're expecting a net positive scenario.
Net positive scenario.
But, you know, since you brought up pent-up demand, do you think that pent-up demand also is going to play out this time around? Because, you know, things as such, you know, businesses did not really stop the way they did the first time around. So do you think that's a phenomenon that's going to happen again?
I say wherever it has happened, wherever lockdowns have happened, minimum for a period of 3 to 4 weeks, the business has come to kind of a grinding halt. So that is what gives us that pent-up demand will be there. The quantum, you and I can discuss, you know, whether it will be the same, high, low, whatever. But yes, there would be certain pent-up demand is what we believe.
Okay. So at this time, you know, since you're saying
if you take the month of May, it is 1/3 of a normal month, the total sales that is registered by all automakers. I'm not talking about Toyota now.
Sure.
All automakers put together is about 1/3 of what normal sales would be. If you convert this into annualized sales, if you were only taking the April annualized sales based on April sales, it will go to 3.7 million. But if you take it based on May sales alone, then it comes down to 1.3 million. You know, is the market going to be 1.3 million? The answer is no. So where is the sale going to come back? You know, the sales will come back because those who wanted to buy a car in May could not go out and do those. So will come in the month of June, July, August, whenever. Of course, they have to overcome all the challenges that they have faced during the crisis.
Fair enough. And you're right. I mean, the quarter itself would definitely take a hit, but the financial year might look better.
Yeah. For example, we have said this, you know, that for the first half of this year, if you compare my first half sales for 2021 as compared to 2020, I'm 104% higher.
Correct.
So it's not but just then, 1 month,
right,
2 months.
So the base effect again comes into play.
Yeah. No, I mean, there was corona last year in similar months, you know, April, May. There is corona in this month, this year also, April and May. But the effect, the net result is still I'm 104% higher than as compared to last year. So that needs to be taken into account.
Yeah. Okay, so that does mean that even natural demand per se hasn't been, right. Okay, so, you know, interestingly, because your buyers from the non-metro regions have actually also increased in this time.
Yes.
Can you walk me through what your you know, customer profile also currently looks like? You know, any insights that you've been able to, you know, distill from that? You know, for instance, the, you know, how much people are spending. You know, you said sub 12 lakhs is a category which is popular right now. So do you expect the traction is going to continue there?
Yeah, last year.
But again, you also saw a market share gain in UVs. So that's another thing you could speak to.
Yeah. So there were two things that happened to us. So last year, what we have seen is in the months of quarter three and quarter four, you know, I'm talking about August onwards. Basically, the sub 12 lakh segment was growing at approximately 30% per annum, okay, as compared to the previous year. Assuming that both years had normal business because there was no corona impact in those 2 years. Of course, there was a ripple effect of corona in 2020, which was the demand coming back. Yes, effect was there. But people were buying 30% more of these less than 12 lakh cars in the year 2020 as compared to 2019. But at the same time, if you move higher the segment, then the market was shrunk by 10%. Market has shrunk by 10%. So it was 90% of last year. So now what happens is that, you know, that this is a economic indicator which gives you a boost if you are present in the segment. So with the presence of the two products that we have, that is Urban Cruiser that we launched and during this period, and also the Glanza, we were able to kind of, you know, give customer an offering for these two kind of mobility needs.
Right.
And the UV segment, what had happened was that from November and December, we started refreshing our much loved Innova and Fortuners. And those caught once again the customer's attention. And that is what resulted into good sales for these products. And that is why I said that this has helped us build those pending orders, which we have kind of validated. And now and feel again confident that once the market opens up, we'll be able to supply those vehicles and then service those customer demands.
Right. So you're right to mention that Toyota has these models which have been loved for years and years, and you know, so they continue to have this sort of loyal fan base, so to say. But you also have products like the Glanza, you have the Urban Cruiser, which came out, and of course the full effect of how well these could have been received perhaps did not play out because of these lockdowns. Going forward, how pivotal are these products, or is this segment of products going to be in the portfolio that you have, and what can we expect from the brand for the rest of the year, or in terms of new products, what's coming up?
Okay,
so and first, when
I'll come to that. Firstly, the fact that I would like to explain to you is that there is a role that these two products, which are the sub 10 lakhs or 12 lakhs product category, that have a role to play. Now, what is the role that they have to play is that these are for customers who otherwise would have been alienated from a Toyota dealership. So this is giving them an experience of owning a Toyota, The product is basically something that allows them to come to the dealership, but it is once they enter the dealership, it's the experience that they get at a Toyota dealership is what we like them to experience, and that's the main intention with which we have launched these two cars. Having said that, the journey continues, and we hope the customer's economic journey also continues, and then he or she is willing to buy a second or a third Toyota, which definitely will be available from the Toyota showroom. So basically, this is an entry point experience for the customers to kind of own a Toyota. That is one. Future products, I'm very sorry. Again, Anisha, you know our philosophy on that, we don't give any indication.
This is going to disappoint whoever stayed on till the end of the podcast.
Yeah, because actually, this is more to do with, in terms of, the product readiness issues on, what product has to be supplied at when, what point of time, are not decisions that can be, once they are ready with the, we are ready with the information, definitely we'll be the first ones to reach out to you, as we've done in the past.
Fantastic. But you can, I expect, give me a sense of, what your strategy also is going to be, when it comes to EVs, hybrids. So when we do see new products, what are we likely to see?
These are national priorities that are driving the nation towards more and more electrification of vehicles, and towards that, I think the most easiest path that what we have seen globally in countries like Japan, in countries like even in Europe and so on and so forth, is that the customers are willing to adopt to a vehicle which naturally transcends them from a typical traditional IC engine into an electrified vehicle domain. Now, the easiest way for them to do is take in a hybrid vehicle, because it has both the IC engine, internal combustion engine, and also it has the battery motor and controller. Now, these battery motor controllers, you mix with different items such as a hydrogen tank, or the make a larger battery, or they have a battery which has a charging. So you have all kinds of electrified vehicles. So the future belongs to electrified vehicles. And towards that, we are committed. And this would help solve the nation's problem of import substitution, number one. And number two, it will also help the nation for, lowering the carbon emissions, which is the two reasons why everybody is talking.
But Toyota, of course, has had this, dominance in, fantastic quality hybrids. But of course, costs in India remain an issue because of, our taxation structures, etc. How is your outlook, as far as that is concerned, when it comes to future products or hybrids, or, just creating a more accessible product, as a route to electrification or full electrification?
Yeah.
How do you think that the needle will really move in the times to come, or in the visibility that you currently have?
Sure. So the technology always moves from the high end, less price conscious segment to a lower end, more price conscious segment, And that actually is a chicken and egg situation. Having said that, I think we are, times have come now where people have realized that, electrified vehicles are the future. And towards that, localization plays in a very important part. So we are on the path of, you know, localizing these components, and once we are able to do those, then I think it'll be able to kind of, you know, service the customer.
And how long is this likely to take? The journey that you complete, and, you know, how soon can one actually see one of these products then come to fruition?
Again, it's a matter of future product strategy. So sorry, it would be very difficult to give a timeline.
You can give us a sense of time.
Yeah, but it'll be the
Vegas ballpark.
Yeah, so as it is going to be, future products will have more and more inclinations towards electrification, is what I can.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you leave us at that. But, you know, since we actually started the discussion with how fuel prices are actually a big factor that, you know, the customer is going to think about, and, you know, psychologically also, you're seeing them, you know, cross 100 rupees, 101 rupees. So that's going to be a consideration increasingly. And of course, there's so much more to talk about, Naveen. But for today, I think this is enough to chew on for this podcast. I had a great time talking to you as always, and very comprehensively answered again as always. So thank you so very much for taking the time out today and talking to me.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you so much, Naveen. Thank you.
And that's a wrap on this edition of the Smooth Ride podcast. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week with a brand new episode only on CNBC TV18.com.